there is no one face of AIDS. From culture to culture, from Africa to Asia to North America, it's unrecognizable. It's a different monster in every village.
She would lead lofty discussion about art while Alice cooked and kept house.
Over the course of his life, Leonardo was devoted to a number of attractive young men.
It's hard being married and living in sin. Sometimes I'm not sure just which state I am in.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. South Africa's first gay newlyweds beat bureaucracy to the altar, Israel's top court affirms marriage portability, and Three Needles pierces the worldwide realities of AIDS. All that and a lot more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 2nd, 2006. Two men celebrated South Africa's first same-gender wedding in the southern Cape town of George on December 1st, the day the new Civil Union Act allowing gay and lesbian couples to legally unite took effect. Vernon Gibbs and Tony Halls have been together for 9 years and combined their surnames following the ceremony. Vernon Halls Gibbs said it was significant that their union took place on World AIDS Day. This marriage is for all HIV/AIDS sufferers and gay people who have experienced discrimination, he said. I just have one message I would like to give to everybody, that we are just two men who love each other and who have loved each other for a long time. His new husband Tony said of their union that it gives us as a couple a lot more security when it comes to pension, property, and bank accounts. The couple runs a guest lodge and animal rehabilitation center, which was attacked last year after it became known that it was being marketed to gay tourists. The Halls Gibbs wore matching Game Ranger outfits at their wedding ceremony. The Civil Union Act was signed into law on November 30th, just a day before the December 1st deadline set by last year's South African Constitutional Court ruling that said marriage discrimination against same-gender couples was unconstitutional. That ruling, which ordered Parliament to fix the inequity by December 1st, was based on South Africa's first-in-the-world constitutional ban on sexual orientation discrimination.
Most other South African same-gender couples, however, will probably have to wait until next year before they can legally tie the knot. Only Home Affairs marriage officers are currently able to officiate at civil ceremonies under the new Civil Union Act, while religious marriage officers have to first undergo examinations on the new act, a process which could take weeks to implement. Vernon and Tony Halls Gibbs were only able to marry because the Home Affairs Registry Office they traveled to, in George, had no other bookings. But registry offices across the rest of the country report that they're booked solid with heterosexual weddings. The soonest gay and lesbian ceremonies can take place in most areas will be January, and couples in Cape Town, Wynberg, Belleville, and Nyanga may have to wait until March. Angry queer activists are saying that Home Affairs, which was on record against it, failed to prepare for the new law that everyone knew was coming. The Civil Union Act also allows civil registry officials who object to same-gender weddings on moral grounds to refuse to perform them. Some legal experts believe that provision of the act may be unconstitutional. The Roman Catholic Church and several conservative Protestant denominations fought the civil union legislation and will also not perform same-gender weddings.
Even though South Africa has become the first on the continent to legally recognize same-gender couples, other uncertainties remain. The country's Human Rights Commission and some LGBT rights advocates have warned that civil unions may not satisfy the Constitutional Court's mandate for marriage equality. South Africa's Marriage Act remains unchanged, although a government spokesperson has said changes will eventually be made to incorporate gay and lesbian couples. The separate Civil Union Act says nothing about gender, but establishes the voluntary union of two persons, which is solemnized and registered by either a marriage or civil union.
In a separate case, South Africa's Constitutional Court ruled on November 23rd that gays and lesbians should be able to inherit the property of their partners who die without a will. The High Court said the country's Intestate Succession Act discriminated against same-gender couples, and that whenever the word spouse is mentioned in that law, the words or partner in a permanent same-sex life partnership in which the partners have undertaken reciprocal duties of support should be added.
Israel's High Court of Justice ruled 6-1 on November 21st that same-gender couples who marry in places where it's legal must be considered legally married in Israel. The case was brought by five Israeli couples who married in Canada. Supported by the Association for Civil Rights in Israel, they appealed to the country's top court after authorities refused to recognize their Canadian unions after they came home. The court ordered the Interior Ministry to recognize the five couples as married. The court emphasized, however, that its decision was not a recognition of same-gender marriage. Israel's religious authorities control the country's marriage and divorce laws, and the court stressed that only Parliament could change that situation. The High Court decision was nevertheless denounced by religious conservatives as an abomination. "We don't have a Jewish state here," said Moshe Gafni, an ultra-Orthodox lawmaker. "We have Sodom and Gomorrah here." He called the ruling the destruction of the family unit in the state of Israel. Gafni said he might offer a bill in Parliament to overturn the court ruling and make recognition of all same-gender marriages in Israel illegal.
A Moscow appeals court this week upheld a lower court ruling that said the city government acted legally when it banned an LGBT pride parade in May. The Moscow Central Prefecture Court agreed with the lower court that the city had the right to prohibit events based on security concerns. Because of the ban, this year's first ever march was downsized to an attempt by LGBT activists to lay flowers at the tomb of the unknown soldier, then walk a few blocks for a rally across from City Hall. The participants were violently attacked by neo-fascists, skinheads, and fundamentalist Christians. Riot police were slow to move in, and most of the 200 people detained were LGBT people and their supporters. Moscow Mayor Yuri Yushkov called the attempt to lay flowers at the tomb of the unknown soldier a desecration, a provocation, and a contamination. "People burst through, and of course they beat them up," he said. Dmitry Betunyev, an attorney for two LGBT groups that had filed the appeal, said he will take the issue to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg.
The new chair of Latvia's Human Rights and Social Affairs Committee is a parliamentarian who's called gays and lesbians degenerates and perverts. Jānis Smits, a leading member of the ultra-right Latvia First Party, was elected to the post by Parliament in what is seen as retaliation against President Vēra Vaika Freiburga for her support of LGBT rights. Mindful that Latvia's European Union membership requires laws banning sexual orientation discrimination, she had earlier this year essentially forced Latvia's Parliament to enact such legislation. The European Parliament's Intergroup on Gay and Lesbian Rights said it deplores the selection of Smits as the country's human rights chair, noting that he frequently quotes the Old Testament in defense of his old-fashioned values, arguing in favor of a worldview that advocates sexual minorities should be put to death. Terry Davis, the Secretary General of the Council of Europe, also issued a statement condemning the selection, saying that the parliamentarians who made this decision should realize that what is at stake is the international reputation of Latvia.
The socially conservative island nation of Grenada has rejected a recommendation from a regional United Nations office to decriminalize homosexuality and prostitution. Health Minister Anne David Antoine said her government would not consider legal reforms advised in a report by the United Nations Development Program after a September conference in Barbados on combating HIV/AIDS. "Every sovereign country has to take on board its own cultural situation, the faith and religious situation within the country," she told reporters after announcing the government would not consider any changes to its laws.
Lesbian gay rights advocates in the Australian island state of Tasmania have written to Tas-born Crown Princess Mary of Denmark, asking her to point out the benefits to her childhood home that have come from its greater acceptance of gays and lesbians. The letter is a direct response to recent media reports of anti-queer harassment and the absence of anti-discrimination laws in the Danish-administered semi-autonomous Faroe Islands. Tasmanian gay and lesbian rights group spokesperson Rodney Kroom said that his state has an important lesson to teach the Faroes and other island communities about the benefits of accepting diversity. Kroom said it would be inappropriate for Princess Mary, as the future queen of a constitutional monarchy, to speak publicly about political matters, but added that she has every right to talk about how Tasmania has changed for the better in the past several years, after long being known for its harsh anti-queer laws and attitudes. "I'm sure no one would resent Princess Mary gently and graciously pointing out lessons from her homeland that may benefit some of her future subjects," said Kroom, A word in the right ear at the right time could make all the difference.
And finally, Sir Elton John was performing in Australia this week and had two less than gentle words for that country's Conservative Prime Minister, John Howard. The pop star and his partner, David Furnish, last December became one of the first queer couples in England to tie the knot in a civil partnership ceremony. It was just a commitment I wanted to make because I love him, and vice versa, and it was just a great day, Sir Elton told the Seven Television Network. The Howard government overturned a civil unions law earlier this year in the Australian Capital Territory, but the PM insisted that his government was not anti-homosexual. It is not a question of discriminating against them, he said. It is a question of preserving, as an institution in our society, marriage as having a special character, and that the ACT civil unions law would have been treated for all purposes as being equivalent to a marriage. Asked what he would like to say to Howard about the PM's views on same-gender unions, Sir Elton simply replied, "Up yours."
That's NewsWrap for the 2 weeks ending December 2nd, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm John Beaupre.
We're married in London, but not in New York. Spain says we're kosher, the States say we're pork. We wed in Toronto, the judge said amen. And when we got home, we were single again. It's hard being married and living in sin. Sometimes I'm not sure just which state I am in. Thank God I'm not Catholic, I'd be a mess, trying to figure out what to confess. My passport in Sweden says I've got a wife. Amsterdam tells me I'm partnered for life. But back in America, land of the free, I'm a threat to the national security. If I were a frog, here is what I would say. It's hard being green, it's hard being gay. But love has no color, and hearts have no sex. So love where you can, and screw all the rest. Thank you very much.
That was a live-in performance ditty by Janice Ian about being married in London and elsewhere, which can be found at www.janiceian.com. The story of another lesbian who's famous and infamous for her words is coming up later in the program, along with a tribute to one of history's gay greats and a preview of a new film by an out director dramatizing the multidimensional facets of the global AIDS crisis.
Hello, I'm Dr. Robert Simmons, Jr. of Lebanon, Ohio, a longtime This Way Out listener and donor. In memory of my mother, Mabel Simmons, I'm issuing a matching challenge to supporters of this volunteer-driven nonprofit operation. Please visit thiswayout.org to see how your help to keep this program on the air will now be worth twice as much. You'll also get a tax deduction if you're in the United States, and you'll find some unique holiday gifts there too. Again, please log on to thiswayout.org. We'll all be very thankful.
There's no time to lose. This offer ends December 31st.
Leonardo da Vinci, Renaissance man, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Leonardo da Vinci was born in Italy in 1452. By age 14, his extraordinary talents as a painter were undeniable. He went on to become one of the greatest painters of the Italian Renaissance, creating such masterpieces as the Madonna of the Rocks and the Last Supper fresco. Over the course of his life, Leonardo was devoted to a number of attractive young men. His drawings of his pupil, Giacomo Caprotti, spanned 20 years. Later, he took an interest in a young aristocrat named Francesco Melzi, who remained by his side until Leonardo's death in 1519. He left behind over 8,000 pages of mere scripted inventions, scientific sketches, and architectural designs. Although some were impractical at the time, others were precursors to the modern-day bicycle and helicopter. His drawings revealed that not only was he the consummate Renaissance artist, but a prolific innovator and scientific genius. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tom Miller.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho.
Hello, this is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm comedian Bob Smith.
Hi, I'm Kate Quinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
Hi, I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, I'm Scott Thompson.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris.
Hi, this is Jeff Straker.
Hi, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
December 1st marked yet another World AIDS Day in the 25th year since the disease was first identified. Clarion calls rose from every corner of the globe, warning of the continuing threat posed by the pandemic. As always, the watchwords were education, testing, and safe sex, with calls for better access to expensive antiretroviral drugs for the tens of millions of people with HIV/AIDS in impoverished areas. Infection rates continue their relentless rise from Asia and Africa, where international experts place the epidemic's epicenters, to Eastern Europe, where official acknowledgement is just catching up, to the gay metropolises of the West, where a new generation of gay men seems to be willfully ignorant of the horrors their predecessors faced in the first several years of the disease. 25 million people have died since those early days, and 40 million are currently estimated to be infected worldwide. Three stories depicting the international AIDS crisis are the meat of Three Needles, a unique and moving film that This Way Out's Steve Pride says informs, enlightens, and, thanks to remarkable performances, entertains. A small indie picture on such a serious subject could easily get lost amid all the big-budget holiday openings, but Steve thinks that would be a shame. He hopes to convince you with this preview and a conversation with out-gay Canadian filmmaker Tom Fitzgerald.
So beautiful.
It's a little spooky.
Look who's talking.
You already supply AZT to your employees.
What else could I do?
Well, you could extend your charity to the community through the mission.
This isn't a charity club. A quarter of my payroll carries the virus. Soon it's going to be half.
What about their families?
Financing the survival of Africa. Bankrupt me in a day.
Three Needles is a trilogy of stories that relate to each other only through the circumstance of a worldwide plague. In South Africa, a nun makes a personal sacrifice for the benefit of an impoverished village. In rural China, a black market operative posing as a government bloodmobile worker jeopardizes an entire town. And in Montreal, an HIV-positive porn actor schemes to pass his mandatory blood tests. It has an all-star cast that includes Stalker Channing, Olympia Dukakis, Lucy Liu, Sandra Oh, Chloe Sevigny, and Sean Ashmore. And it was written and directed by out-gay Canadian filmmaker Tom Fitzgerald, best known for The Hanging Garden, Beefcake, and The Event. Three Needles is easily his most ambitious work, and according to him, it was also a learning experience.
A lot of my education in researching the film was about the wide variety of different ways that HIV is spread. It was through talking to actual missionaries that I learned of the recycling of needles, which is so prevalent in parts of Africa, because people there aren't consumers. They're used to reclaiming and reusing everything that they possibly have as resources. And in South Africa, I went to the clinic and learned firsthand about the rape of children, where the myth tells people that a virgin has special healing powers. And I'd read about it, but I wanted to go to the clinic and see what the real truth was. And then they confirmed that, yes, this is something that does happen. And it's so prevalent that the university there suggests that it's more than half of children at this point are being raped before they're out of elementary school. I didn't actually get to do research in China. A filmmaker needs a host producer to work in China. And I asked 14 different producers, but none of them were willing to submit the script to the censorship board. This was 3+ years ago, and AIDS was only just acknowledged in China at that time. It was a very controversial and scary issue.
One surprise in Three Needles is that it focuses primarily on heterosexual characters.
In the big picture of AIDS, gay men make up a tiny fraction of people with AIDS. There is no one face of AIDS. From culture to culture, from Africa to Asia to North America, it's unrecognizable. I think that must be part of the reason why we don't come together to fight it. That's a question that plagued me. Why, when we all have a common enemy in this virus, has it only caused us to point fingers, lay blame, become enraged? And I think it's because we don't recognize AIDS from place to place. It's a different monster in every village.
In Tom Fitzgerald's last film, The Event, the monster was in a very different village. That film was about AIDS and the gay community in New York's fashionable Chelsea district.
I felt when I was making The Event that I was not making a gay film. I felt like this was a story I was making for my mom and for all the other moms out there in New Jersey. Gay people knew that story inside out and backwards. This was not going to be something enlightening to us. So with Three Needles, though, I think it's actually a film that gay people do respond to particularly. And I think it's partly because my journey to try and redefine this ghost in my life, I think also is important to other gay men. The idea of looking at AIDS from a very different perspective than we have been for so long is kind of a release in a lot of ways.
Since it was first officially recognized on June 5th, 1981, it's estimated that AIDS has killed more than 25 million people. And while the next wave of HIV/AIDS is spreading most rapidly among heterosexuals in places like Nigeria, Ethiopia, Russia, India, and China, gay men must remain vocal and vigilant.
I think gay men understand what it feels like to be terrorized and disempowered by this disease. Gay men understand what it's like to stand up and fight, to fight politically, to fight socially, and I'll tell you, that's where we failed in Africa. And you know where we've never moved on from our ideas of AIDS being a gay disease is in our prevention methods. The prevention methods today are the same ones that grew out of the raging debate between gay men and political conservatives in the 80s. And gay men shouted condoms, condoms, and political conservatives shouted abstinence, faithfulness. Well, you know what? Those things are what we can do to prevent AIDS. Two gay men in San Francisco can negotiate the use of a condom. Everyone I met in South Africa understood that they should condomize it. They had some kind of slogan they'd been taught. They understood a condom would protect them, but they sure as hell didn't have any condoms. We went over there and taught them condoms would keep them safe, but we have utterly failed to provide the condoms to the people of Africa. I believe on average each year there are 3 condoms for every person in Africa. Well, that's not a lot of sex. And where we shot our film in South Africa, in this rural region, women were taught never to look in a man's eye directly, that it wasn't her place. They were taught never to hold her head higher than a man's. If she encountered a man shorter than her, she was to crouch and slouch. Men sit on chairs and women sit on the floor. If you can't look your husband in the eye, you certainly can't tell if he's been faithful to you. So our ideas of AIDS prevention have nothing to do with the people of Africa, and they haven't helped at all. We need to treat AIDS societally. The status of women and the status of children has to be addressed in a broad way. A woman has to be able to say no to sex if she's going to choose abstinence or faithfulness in the first place.
And what does Tom Fitzgerald hope audiences will take away from his film?
The importance of getting beyond our own experience and point of view about this pandemic, because it's growing. I really am hard-pressed to think of how many things are more important to us as a species to combat, to address. But we are very limited by the fact that we're fighting it in isolation, that the methods that work here aren't going to work in Africa, that things that work in Africa aren't going to work in Asia. We need to step outside. It's very difficult for humans to step outside their own point of view. It's one of the great limitations and I suppose beauties of being human. But if we're going to be able to defeat this virus before it defeats us, we are going to have to somehow understand what it's like to be somebody else. One of the few things that a movie can do is introduce you to somebody else's point of view.
This has been a conversation with out gay director Tom Fitzgerald. Three Needles is being distributed in the U.S. by Wolf Releasing. More info about the film can be found at 3-needles.com and, as always, at prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I saw fools with roses and eyes like a Moses. It's all too familiar. Crazy enough to kill you. I saw coffin cages holding babies and sages. And I'll tell you no lies, man. We're holding down the wise man.
Gertrude Stein, out lesbian across the centuries. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Gertrude Stein was born in Pennsylvania in 1874. As a young woman, she discovered a passion for writing and moved to Paris. Her books were always controversial, but she became famous in light of her persona, a mannish avant-garde intellectual. In 1907, she met Alice B. Toklas, who would become her lifetime companion. Since Gertrude was an avid arts patron, their home became a popular hangout for famous artists and writers such as Picasso and Hemingway. She would lead lofty discussion about art while Alice cooked and kept house. In the 30s, they traveled to America to promote one of Gertrude's books as the world's most famous lesbian couple. The radiance of their 39-year relationship was captured in Gertrude's written word. How prettily we swim, not in water, not on land, but in love. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Candace Gingrich.
She's a seasoned women's music icon.
I know I'm not your therapist.
He's a polished young rookie making waves in the Big Apple. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and they are just two of a talented crop of GLBT musicians we'll present on the Audiophile 2006 Year in Review.
Coming the last week of December here on This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Hello, my friend.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Steve Pride, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Tom Miller and Candace Gingrich contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle. Rick Kirk performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. Remember, your support is worth twice as much to us until the end of the year. And you can choose from some special CD thank you gifts, too. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WYEP, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, CFUR, Prince George, British Columbia, KZSC, Santa Cruz, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Let's all stay tuned.